Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, I was out of the 12th Hour Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August 5, 2017, or it is 8-14-2021. We will start our second service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, More About Yahshua. More about Yahshua I would know, more of His grace to others show, more of His saving fullness see, more of His love He died for me. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness see, more of His love He died for me. More about Yahshua let me learn, more of His holy will discern. Spirit of Yah, my teacher be, showing the things of Yahshua to me. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness, more of His love He died for me. More about Yahshua in His Word, holding communion with my heart, hearing His voice in every land, and teaching faith for saving mine. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness, more of His love He died for me. More about Yahshua on His throne, riches and glory all His own. More of His kingdom sure increase, more of His coming Prince of Peace. More about Yahshua, more about Yahshua, more of His saving fullness, more of His love He cared for me. Part 24, Prophecy in the Daniel Revelation, Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 265. Let's do a little review from our last study. For the remnant of Israel, the 144,000, shall not do iniquity or speak lies like the mother church has done ever since she was born, practically. Well, I shouldn't say that. The mother church, the Seventh-day Adventist church, spoke the truth for 45 years. Of course, they had those false voices in their midst from 1844 to 1890 that told lies. But the prophet Ellen G. White, very active during that period of time, told the truth, inspired truth, and she published it. So we have the record of the Adventists at one time were full of truth. Let's go ahead. For they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. This is 144,000. This is Zephaniah 3:13. And that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses, those princes, those that carry the gospel, that carry the good news of the plan of salvation to the blood of the everlasting covenant unto the world. Holiness unto the Yahweh, Father, and the Son, and the parts, parentheses, in whose possession is the truth. So, the 144,000 represents these parts that they have in possession the truth. And the Yahshua's house shall be like the bowls before the altar, pure and undefiled. Yea, every part in Jerusalem, the church, and in Judah, the leading part of the church, shall be holiness unto the Yahshua the host. And all they that sacrifice offering shall come and take of them and seethe therein. They who administer in the sacred things, and in that day there shall be no more of the Canaanite unconverted in the house of Yahshua the host. Zechariah 14:20-21. There is the congregation that is represented in Revelation 12:17, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. For the woman represents the church as a body. Now this is just kind of a skinny statement, because just to say the woman represents the church as a body, and the woman truly represents the Seventh-day Adventist church as a body, then the Adventist church would have to be completely holy and undefiled. All their members and all their ministry, the whole thing. But we know they didn't restore the sanctuary. And when it was restored by a prophet unto them, they rejected it. So therefore, they could not be represented by this pure white woman in Revelation 12. So, but the theologian insists, though, that the woman represents the church as a body. As a body. In other words, the woman can only represent the 144,000 that's in the Adventist church as a body. So, that's the only way that the Adventist church can lay claims to being this purified woman, is that they have a purified ministry, priesthood in their midst of the 144,000. Okay, the remnant of her seed are the 144,000 against whom the dragon makes the war. The war is raised against them because they are the earthly leaders and founders of the movement. Of her seed signifies that they are part of the woman, or in other words, the 144,000 and the great multitude is but one movement, one family. Now I get the idea of how V.T. Hardup, how he came to this conclusion that the woman represents the Adventist church, because his message was announcing the 144,000 that are at hand to come out of the Adventist church. And he believed that they were assigned to his temple. And so therefore, he knew from his readings that of the scriptures and Ellen G. White's and so forth, that this is a purified group once they appear, and that they come out of the bowels of the Adventist church. So, in that respect, then, he could truly say that that woman represents the church as a whole purified. Alright. Unto the saints of this holy congregation is with the benediction being pronounced, blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have a right unto the tree of life and may enter into the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. But for the Adventists not seek a deeper understanding of this, what I just read, with the inspiration, is to cause them to become fully blinded and lose their way completely at last. Because if they would understand that they didn't get a benediction pronounced upon them, because of them being arrested in the courts of heaven as being obedient to all of Yahweh's commandments. They didn't get that return answer that these are the faithful ones that have keeps all my commandments. And then not only all the commandments, but the faith of Yahshua. Faith of what Yahshua? The faith in the blood of the Yahshua. And when you do that, and when you're being sanctified by your having faith in the blood of the Yahshua, then it shows that you are following the complete whole law of the sanctuary. That's in the sanctuary, not just the seventh day Sabbath, but the whole law. And not just the Ten Commandments. By keeping the whole law is how you get remission, and this is where the blood comes in at. By the keeping of the whole law. Keeping just the Ten Commandments don't get you the blood, and it's not accredited as being, as giving, as keeping the, all the commandments. So you go to John 15:10, it says, Yahshua says to the disciples, if you keep my commandments, you shall abide in my love, even as I kept my Father's commandments and abide in his law. So, the Father and the Son are in charge of two forms of commandments. Okay, the Father is the author definitely of the Ten Commandments with his own finger. Yahshua is the author of all, he's a co-author of the Ten Commandments and the laws of the sacrificial service of the sanctuary. And all the other additional holy Sabbath days. New moon's a Sabbath day, comes 4 times a year. You have the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Passover comes once a year. You have the Feast of the Tabernacles, comes once a year. You have the Day of Atonement, once a year. Those are all holy days, called Sabbath days. So I said, but under the saints of this holy congregation, and that holy congregation is the congregation of David. Okay? Of the tribe of Judah. They congregated at the location where the tribe of Judah has its headquarters. That's on the kingly palace ground on top of it, where the temple is, where they come to worship. Where the saints of the holy, of this holy congregation, is with the benediction being pronounced, blessed are they that do his commandment, that they may have a right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. And to the saints of this holy congregation, the benediction is pronounced. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. Jacob, the father and type of the Israel, dreamed on the way to Padan Aram. And behold, a ladder set upon the earth, and the top of it reached unto heaven, into heaven. And behold, the angels of the Elohim ascending and descending on it. And he was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of Yahweh, and this is the gate of the heaven. Genesis 28:12-17. Jacob's dream is prophetic of a time when there will be a complete connection and constant communication with heaven and earth. The loud cry of the third angel's message in the harvest time. And to that glorious congregation, these words apply. This is the house of Yahweh and the gate of heaven. Only by the gospel proclamation through that spiritual house can Elohim save his people. There is to be one fold, one shepherd, one savior, one truth to embrace. One salvation to accept. one road to travel, one gate to pass through, one train to take, and one time to depart, one heaven to enter, one people, and one holy family. There can be no other way. It is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of Yahweh who shall be alive upon the earth when the celestial glory and a repetition of the persecutions of the past are blended. They will walk in the light proceeding from the throne of Yahweh. By the means of the angels, there will be constant communication between heaven and earth. Testimonies for the Church, Volume 9, page 16. For the time for the building of the antitypical temple congregation. We partially explained that the two literal temples successfully built in the ancient Jerusalem were types of the two sections of the apostolic congregation. For the wide, literal, and spiritual contrast of these two typical structures was explained comparatively with the type and antitype. We could have greatly enlarged on the subject. We have eliminated excessive reading by the briefly stating of the facts, endeavoring for the painting of a more comprehensive pen picture of this most vital lesson unto the Christendom. For the question before us is, when will the antitype meet its perfect fulfillment? In the preceding paragraphs, it was explained that the first session of the apostolic congregation ended in 538 A.D., and the second must commence after 1798 A.D., at which time the woman was supposed to return from the wilderness. A close study of the type is the only possible way to clear the truth, not only of the foregoing question, but also of the following ones. If the woman was to return from the wilderness to the vineyard civilization after the end of the prophetic period of 1260 years, what transpired in 1798 to prove that she can? Back in that year, As the imprisonment and death of the Pope answers one side of the question and clears the end of the prophetic period. Where is a sign to show that the woman returned from the wilderness? If the accepted interpretation of the woman is a symbol of the Church, and she was in the wilderness from 538 A.D. until 1798 A.D., what about the four great denominations that were raised up prior to that time, namely the Lutherans, Presbyterians, Methodists, and Christians? Were they not the woman, the Church? Bible students have failed to clear this mystery because of their lack of light on the Word of Yahweh. A great searchlight by the power of the Spirit shining through the types is the only medium that can remove the obstruction and clear the way for an understanding of these and many other mysteries that are considered incomprehensive and that baffle the human mind. Therefore, the temple type of the Church woman is the only channel by which these questions can be answered. The temple and the woman represent the Church as a body, or in other words, the symbol of the woman is a revelation of the types, temples, and the temples are symbolical prophecies of the woman, Church. It will be noticed that the separate members of that church are represented by the composite substance of the temple. As lively stones are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable unto Yahweh by the Hashem itself. 1 Peter 2:5. So we being many are one body in the Asher, and every one members one of another. Romans 12:5. And whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Yahweh. Ephesians 2:21. Therefore, these two temples represent both the church and Yahshua. Yahshua, our high priest, is prefigured by the chief cornerstone, and his priestly administration by the ceremonial or sanctuary service of these two literal temples. For the earthly sanctuary service for the salvation of the human race, and types and symbols reveal Yahshua's administration in the heavenly, which was made up of the two laws, namely the Ten Commandments and the ceremonial laws. The tables of the Ten Commandments were put in the ark, and the ceremonial or the law of Moses was placed on the side of the ark. See Deuteronomy 10:2, 31:26. Why two laws? For the moral law points out the sin for by the law of the knowledge of sin, Romans 3:20. For where no law is, there is no transgression, Romans 4:15. But the ceremonial law was added because of the transgressions till the seed should come unto whom the promise was made, Galatians 3:19, which was a remedy for the healing of the sinner and for the sitting free from the condemnation of the law, of the moral law. When the Yahshua, the seed came, he took this law of the ordinance, the law of Moses, out of the way, nailed it unto his cross, unto the cross, Colossians 2:14. For the earthly administration of the law of the ordinance could not give life of itself because it was only a shadow of the true. Therefore, at the crucifixion of Yahshua, it ceased, and the heavenly one, which was foreshadowed by the earthly, began the literal sanctuary service of both temples, were identical. Okay, therefore, these two temples are types of two sections of the apostolic temple, with the antitypical sanctuary service made up of these two laws, moral and ceremonial. First section of the apostolic congregation from the crucifixion until about 538 A.D. was endowed with just such a sanctuary. That is, they had a perfect knowledge of the work in the heavenly unto that time, and their faith corresponded with his service. But in 538 A.D., that is with the faith of this divine administration being thrown out from the temple of Israel, or as Daniel puts it, trodden under the foot, Daniel 8:13, and substituted by a pagan priesthood with a pagan ceremonial and moral laws or papal service and Sunday worship. Therefore, as the first temple typified the first section of the early apostolic congregation, with the faith in a true sanctuary service, Just so the second temple, as prefigured the last section of the same temple, with the faith and a sanctuary service, that would be identical with the first. So Verlis Johnson restored the second sanctuary service that was identical to the sanctuary service that the apostles performed with the holy days. So this is proof that Verlis Johnson's restoration of the sanctuary service with all the holy days of the creation calendar is proof, because he's the antitype. He's the second temple. He represented building that second temple that the apostles built. Well, as the apostles' temple fell away, because it got invaded, so Verlis Johnson's temple also faded away. Gilead Center. 2003. Well, the foregoing explanation answers one of our questions. For the Protestant church congregations, which were raised up before the woman returned from the wilderness, were in the total darkness concerning the sanctuary service. And I'd like to also mention at this point that so was the Seventh-day Adventists, even though they were commissioned with the theme of the 2300-day prophecy of restoring of this sanctuary. They could not claim to be a replica of this sanctuary of true worship until they have restored it back to its rightful order. So, the Adventist was not that Israel, spiritual Israel today, that represents the restoration of the sanctuary. And now there was a shepherd rod that V.T. Holliff, the author of this here article, is writing about. He wasn't either. But there is to be a section of the Adventist movement that is to represent this here. And Brother Johnson was that one, the third feeding pastor, Gilead Center. Therefore, they are not represented by the woman. So, I just got through saying it. So, Mount Bashan, Seventh-day Adventist, 1844 to 1890, was not represented by the woman, the purified woman. And 1930 to 1970, the shepherd's rod was not represented by that purified woman. So it says, because it says, therefore they are not represented by the woman or by the temple. For as we stated before, the typical temples represent both sections of the church with the two divine laws. And the two divine laws, namely moral, Ten Commandments, and ceremonial, the Sabbath of the sanctuary service, the service of the sanctuary itself, with all the additional holy days restored, connected to the seventh-day Sabbath. And Brother Johnson is the one that did this. And all of those are found in Leviticus 23, the two divine laws. One, the moral, the Ten Commandments, and the second one, the laws of Yahshua. The moral law is Yahweh the Father is the author of, and the ceremonial system, the Son is the author of, or the co-author. Thus, the woman represents a temple that keeps the commandments of Yahweh, the moral law, and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah, the ceremonial law, or the plan of salvation revealed in the light of the spirit of the prophecy, Revelation 12:17. And Brother Johnson and Gilead Center fully represented that that temple of the Israel, of the SDA, as being the one that had the plan of salvation revealed in the light of the spirit of the prophecy, Revelation 12:17. For the reformers before the woman returned from the wilderness were divinely called out as a preparatory step to bring her back into the vineyard, that is, to establish a true antitypical temple service, true church worship. So, let's read that again. For the reformers, Luther, John Knox, Presbyterian, Luther, the Lutheran congregation, John Wesley, the Methodist, 1725, Alexander Campbell, the Christian, or the Baptist, 1810. The reformers before the woman returned from the wilderness were divinely called out as a preparatory step for the bringing her back into the vineyard, that is, to establish a true antitypical service, true church worship. And so not only were the reformers, Lutheran, Knox, John Knox, Wesley, and Campbell, but also William Miller and Ellen G. White is included in that reformer, and V.T. Hollis. They were included in that reformation, because V.T. Hollis was the last reformer to finally get the congregation ready and prepared to receive the full restoration of the sanctuary by a creation calendar that Rutledge Johnson produced in 1970. So how many reformers was that then? You had Luther, John Knox, Wesley, Campbell, that's four, Miller, five, Ellen G. White, six, and V.T. Hollis, seven. You had seven reformers that brought the congregation up to the point where she had enough light restored unto her to restore the ordained system of true worship, and that was given to Rutledge W. Johnson, and he would then be, Rutledge Johnson would be the eighth reformer that was called to reform the House of Israel out of the Dark Ages. As the Solomon's Temple was robbed of the sacred vessel and destroyed, well, actually, we want to deal with all the reformers. I left out Ben Roden. P.T. Hollis was number seven reformer. Ben Roden was the number eight. And Rutledge Johnson was number nine. And Elijah David is number ten. Because I'm the one that put the capstone on the Reformation. Okay. As the Solomon's Temple was robbed of the sacred vessels and destroyed by the Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, ancient Babylon became a type. And had it not been so, there would have been no modern Babylon, the Antitype, Revelation 18:2. And there is no controversy as to who these two Babylonians are. It is not difficult to unmask the mystery, and the proof of one will also clear the other. If the claim in this study is correct, that Solomon's Temple was a type of the first session of the apostolic congregation, and there must be a perfect comparison with the type and antitype. Let's read that again. It was a type of the first section of, okay, the apostolic congregation. Okay. As type destroyed type, so antitype must have destroyed antitype. That is, ancient Babylon, the type of the papacy, robbed and destroyed Solomon's Temple. The type of the early apostolic congregation, and led Israel into captivity. For this symbolical prophecy made its perfect fulfillment, in 538 A.D., when the papacy went forth and destroyed the apostolic congregation of Israel, robbed them of the truth of the sanctuary, of the moral and the ceremonial system, the Ten Commandments, and all of the additional holy days, and led the followers of Yeshua into the captivity, subject unto the papal rule. As the true sanctuary worship was abolished by the ancient Babylon, at the captivity of Israel, with the destruction of the temple, just so the papacy did away with the truth and strategically supplanted here on earth the meaning of the mediatorial work of the Yeshua and the true heavenly sanctuary, of which the ceremonial system of the first temple was a type. So, in the period before the judgment began, thus the second temple represents the time while the judgment was in the session, and as the sacred vessels were carried from the sanctuary and set up in a pagan temple in a heathen land, just so the papacy trod down the truth and set up a pagan priesthood in a so-called apostolic congregation of the Israel during the Dark Ages, while the woman was in the wilderness, which was typified by the heathen land Babylon. Our second coincidence is the fall of the Babylonian monarchy by the conquest of the Medo-Persian king. This is where we're at today. Donald Trump represents he and his vice president, Mike Pence, represents the president and the vice president, are the two kings of the antitypical Medo-Persian kings today. Let it be remembered that in the night of the Belshazzar's drunken feast, and this would be Obama and company, they are still operating in another headquarters just a few miles down the road from the White House. Cyrus and Darius took the kingdom and slew the king. Well, Obama is the antitypical king of Babylon, that's represented as antitypical Belshazzar, the son of Nebuchadnezzar. So in this case, then, there's got to be a clarity as to the enactment and the antitypical unfolding of this same event in our day, literally being explained in that fashion. For the fulfillment of the type and the antitype, which coincides with the imprisonment of the Pope in 1798 A.D. and followed by his death, therefore the death of Belshazzar. Okay, now Obama represents antitypical Belshazzar today, who defied the Elohim of heaven and earth, is a type of the Pope, who blasphemed for a time, times, and a half a time, fulfilling Daniel 7:25 and Revelation 13:10. At which time the prophetic 1260 years of the woman's wilderness journey ended. Again, we refer back unto the type. With the death of Belshazzar, the captivity of Elohim's people ended, and they were made free. This coincides with the termination of the 1260 years of the persecution against the Yahweh's people by the papacy, church, and state. For the fall of the Babylonian monarchy was not the thing that built the temple in Jerusalem, but it was a preparatory step unto it. And the death of Belshazzar was a preparatory step toward the establishment of a true temple worship. So Obama is still very much operating on the scene today. He hasn't been destroyed, but yet he's representing an antitype of Belshazzar, second king of Babylon. Just so, the death of the Pope was a preparatory step toward the establishment of a true congregation worship. If so, then the type clearly shows that nothing could have happened unto the congregation of 1798 A.D. to signify that the woman had returned from the wilderness. This brings us to the third coincidence. Cyrus, there we go, king, was a heathen worshiper at the time he conquered Babylon. Now this Cyrus, when you see that word Cyrus, it is synonymous with the word Trump today. You put Trump right on top of that. Okay, it says, but his attention was turned unto the fulfillment of the scriptures. It was shown that his name was written in a sacred volume years before he was born, that he had fulfilled the words of the prophet Isaiah. Thus saith the Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him. And I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee, and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass, and cut in sunder the bars of iron. And I will give thee the treasures of darkness, and the hidden riches of the secret places, that thou mayest know that I, the Yahweh, which called thee by thy name, am the Elohim of Israel. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me, Isaiah 45:1-4. That saith unto Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying unto Yahusha, thou shalt be built, and unto the temple thy foundation shall be laid, Isaiah 44:28. Well, Donald Trump hasn't fully conquered Babylon yet. That's why we're having the problems we're having in Washington, D.C. When this Obama rises up to resist the invasion of Donald Trump and his army, and typical Shahs, today, when he rises up with his army to do that, and literally becomes defeated, that will be also the death of this here antitypical Belshazzar Obama. Now you can go read Isaiah 14 for the death of this antitypical Belshazzar. The prophecy in Isaiah 14 and also in Ezekiel 28. Those two chapters will give you a parallel but the prophecies of the death of this here antitypical Belshazzar. Thus, his heathen heart was changed, and with gratitude he inscribed the words, thus says Cyrus, the king of Persia, the Yahweh Elohim of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. For Donald Trump has not yet achieved that milestone of having conquered all the kingdoms of the earth. But when he does, then you know that Babylon has been fully defeated with Obama at the head of it. And he has charged me to build him a house at Jerusalem, which is in Judah. Well, there it is today. They're fighting on that Temple Mount over a day over the building of that third temple. And Israel, the Jews, have lost control of the Temple Mount, so they can't do anything to pursue their plans of rebuilding the third temple. That's why Yahweh has allowed it to be fall out of their hands too, and in the hands of their enemy, the Jordanians, which are Muslim, Arabs, so forth. That's why they don't have control of today. Israel 1:2. After his conversion, he recognized that the pagan worship in Babylon was false. Therefore, he proclaimed throughout the rim of Babylon, the Yahweh Elohim of Israel, he is the Elohim which is in Jerusalem. Donald Trump has already done this, antitypical Shah. Also Cyrus the king brought forth a vessel of the house of Yahweh, which Nebuchadnezzar had brought forth out of Yerusalem, and had put them in the house of his God. Even those did Cyrus king of Persia bring forth by the hand of Mithridat the treasurer, and numbered them under Shalbazar the prince of Judah. Ezra 1:3-8. For Donald Trump has converted unto the truth of the Judean doctrine of the Jews. He believes in the Sabbath. He's confessed that. He's not fully practicing all of it, but he has shown that he believes it. His daughter has converted to it, and she's his, one of his chief counselors. Thus, the pagan worship of the Babylon was declared false sometime after the death of Belshazzar. So after Obama is finally brought to count, brought to judgment, and after the death of this antipical Belshazzar, the once king of Babylon, because when Cyrus moved into the palace of antipical Babylon, Washington, D.C., won the election there, and he sits in that Oval Office, showing that he has taken the throne of Babylon, and he is actually the new king of Babylon. But until the old king, the one before him, is dead, then you won't have a complete fulfillment of this Cyrus taking completely over and defeating Babylon. The leaders of this Babylon that he has overthrown out of their palace, they've got to be completely destroyed. And that's what's in the making right now. Therefore, Cyrus made a decree to build the house of Yahweh in Jerusalem. So much for the type. Now, our attention is turned unto its fulfillment in the antitype. According to the type, we must look for a proclamation sometime after 1798 AD that was brand the so-called Christian churches, or the Protestant Reformed churches, has been Babylon, and their worship false. This is just what happened immediately after 1844. The second angel's message of the Revelation 14:8 was proclaimed, saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Therefore, it is evident that light shining through the types is the only medium that can explain these prophetic mysteries in the word of Yahweh. With the proclamation of the fall of Babylon, it was announced that the so-called Christian festivals, such as Sunday keeping, Christmas, and Easter, also baptism by the sprinkling, and other false doctrines were unbiblical and of pagan origin. But as the ancient Babylon failed to renounce the pagan system of worship and adopt the worship of the only true Yahweh, just so present-day Christendom has refused to reform or turn from these practices. And that, when it says Christendom, it's talking about the Adventists being the head and the leader of this here, all the Christian churches. The true mediatorial work of the heavenly sanctuary, jointly with the seventh-day Sabbath, as it was then taught, is also unheeded. So therefore, this Babylon is fallen, yeah. Her power had been broken during the Dark Age, but she only suffered a moral fall, not a physical annihilation off the face of the earth. Because as the Christian churches came on into the Adventist movement in 1844, Adventists tried to reform Babylon by speaking out against Christmas and so forth at first, those pagan holidays, but now, since the death of Ellen G. White, that voice has been silenced, and so the new voices, which were Babylon, came and thoroughly entrenched themselves at the headquarters of all Christendom today, and that's the Adventist Church. And so therefore, you're looking at a second, not only moral fall of Babylon, but a literal physical fall, and that's pointed out there in Revelation 17, 18, and 19, those three chapters. Three decrees issued before the temple was built. Okay, it says, three decrees issued before the temple was built. Though Cyrus freely offered his resources to finance the construction of the house of Yahweh and his sacred service, and authoritatively commanded that it must be built, the Samaritans, or the fictitious Jews, frustrated the progress of the foundation and retarded its completeness. So, it says, therefore, though the message decree in 1844 was proclaimed to build the house of Yahweh and restore true worship according unto the law and the prophet, the type reveals that the progress has been frustrated and its completeness retarded by the fictitious Jews. And who are the fictitious Jews today? In other words, the fake Jews, of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the General Conference leadership of the Jesuits. They're your fake Jews today. Untrue Seventh-day Adventists. This fact is plainly stated in the Testimonies for the Church, Volume 5, page 217. I am filled with the sadness when I think of our condition as a people. For Yahweh hath not closed heaven unto us, but our own course of continual backsliding hath separated us from Yahweh. Pride, covetousness, and love of the world have lived in the heart without fear of the banishment or condemnation. The congregation was turned back from following Yahshua, her leader, and is steadily retreating toward Egypt. Yet few are alarmed or astonished at the want of the spiritual power. False accusations and excuses. These unconverted Seventh-day Adventists, which is your fictitious Jews, when told of these facts, not to criticize or to find fault with them, but to arouse them from the terrible stupor of the deception and false security, began to make excuses in the following manner. We are Elohim's people. This is Yahweh's congregation. There is no other movement to follow. It is wicked to accuse the church militant. You are sitting time. You must not tear down, but build up. Shun them which make divisions. There shall be no more prophets. We have all the truth, and there is no need of more. My brethren, as you have trimmed your lamps, will you not also avail yourselves of the extra oil, truth, and act like men who are looking for their Savior to come? No one denies the fact of your being Elohim's people, but remember that the Jews also were once his people. No one wishes to affirm that it is not Yahweh's congregation, our temple, but is this the only time he has ever had a temple? We do not claim that there is another movement to follow. Well, he's not claiming that because he believes that they were in the last movement, the Adventists were. And they were the fourth movement, and yet the Pillar of Matthew 20 shows that there is a fifth movement of workers in Matthew 20, verse 6, that were to follow this movement that V.T. Hallett is talking about. The fourth one, but it's not the word of Yahweh, the true witness, but it's not the word of the true witness saying, I will spew thee out of my mouth. That's in Revelation 3, 14 and 19. If calling the church militant unto a reformation by anointing their eyes with the eye salve that they may see, that the shame of their nakedness do not appear, as wicked as you say, then again, whom are you speaking? And what other means can he use to call to repentance this Laodicean rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing condition, and knowest not that thou art wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. Now here again is a prophet failing to identify and explain this angel of the candlestick. He calls the Adventist church this angel, more or less, indirectly. But the angel is the prophet in charge of the candlestick, the seventh candlestick of Laodicea. All right. Is the one who calls for obedience unto the truth according unto the word of Yahweh tearing down? Are the ones who have broken every true principle of the message we bear? Who has caused division? Is it the ones, is it he who calls for the obedience of the word, or the one who refuses to hear a call from heaven? Do you recall that the apostolic congregation was split in seven reformatory sessions because the messages were rejected? That's your seven candlesticks in Revelation 1, seven stars, or the messages of the seven candlesticks. Okay, so who is the one that should be shunned? Is it he who accepts truth, regardless of where it comes, or the one who allows prejudice to bar his mind from receiving the truth? Your claim of having all the truth and that there is need of none is denying every word written into the congregation of the Seventh-day Adventist, for it is rejecting in advance every message of the truth of light Elohim may choose to send. It is shutting Yahweh out and cutting the church loose from his stretched out arm. It is a preparatory step towards sinning against the Holy Spirit. That's exactly what happened at the apostasy of that slothful servant of Matthew 24:45. Your assertion that there shall be no more prophets is casting off beforehand the latter rain and the loud cry. He's talking directly to the angel of the candlestick, the last one to have charge of it, and that's Rose Johnson, 2002. And it is in the denying of the word in its prophetic form, for we read, and it shall come to pass after that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your son and your daughter shall prophesy, your old men shall dream dreams, your young men shall see visions, Joel 2:28. This brings the third verse to this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call, us number 11, click on our audio archives. Hear this message and more. Let us close now with a song. Marching to Zion. Come with that love of Yah, and let her joys be known. Join a song with a sweet accord. Join in the song with a sweet accord. And thus surround the throne, and thus surround the throne. We're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of Yom. But those refuse to sing who never knew Yom. The children of the heavenly King, the children of the heavenly King, they speak their joys abroad, they speak their joys abroad. They're marching to Zion, beautiful, beautiful Zion. They're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yom. The hill of Zion yields a thousand sacred sweet. Before we reach the heavenly field, before we reach the heavenly field, oh, the golden sheep. heard much into Zion, did it beautiful Zion, heard much in effort to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah. Let our songs abound and every tear be dry. We're marching to Emmanuel's front. We're marching to Emmanuel's front. To fair worlds on high. To fair worlds on high. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching up to Zion, the beautiful city of Yah.